talking birthday talk for the state of Arizona here at Rosie on the House with Don Ryden and Dr. Jack August. Don, we were just on our way out of the last break talking about this original state capitol building built as the territorial right at the turn of the century.
Absolutely.
Hang on one second.
There we go.
There we go. Okay. And tell me, what is the architectural... How do you name this architecture?
Well, this particular style was popular at the turn of the century when everything in the country was going towards classical revivalism. So this is Italian Renaissance revival style. And the shape of the building as a temple to government harkens back to Roman styles. Okay. And the dome, the shape of the dome, is supposed to connect the imagery of government back to Washington, D.C. So that's why so many state capitals throughout the country have domes. They are little state capitals. Now, little national capitals, the point being really way back when, before before the Civil War, it was the United States of America from the bottom up, and after the Civil War, it was more from the federal point of view, from the top down.
Yes, and the stone. Do you know where the stone was quarried, this bottom row, the gray?
Well, the gray that you see is gray granite, and that actually came from the Salt River Mountains. That is, we call it in Phoenix, the South Mountain.
Okay.
And below grade, you can't see it here, but in the foundations were made from Malpais, from Camelback Mountain. And then up above, the second and third floors are tufa stone, or tuff, from Yavapai County near Kirkland.
Beautiful building. And then when we were here, kind of having our pre-interview, we were here at Food Truck Friday, having lunch on the mall. You started pointing out some of the other buildings, and I'm trying to remember so this is Italian classical?
Italian Renaissance Revival.
Italian Renaissance Revival. And I'm thinking the word you had for some of the other buildings down here was debacle?
Debacle style.
Was that it?
Oh, well, people pretty much think that the latest edition, I think it was about 1979, which is the executive branch on the west side, is a debacle then and now, but it's actually a style popular in the late 70s. It's called brutalism.
The brutalism, that's what it was.
But okay. That's having to do okay. with raw concrete. Okay. It's made of concrete.
All right, let's bring the historian in, Dr. Jack August. Yeah. Dr. Jack, we've got some callers, particularly on the line, that would like to talk to you. We've got Audrey and Pete, and then Tom wants to actually get in and talk about a roofing question. We are a home improvement show. It is Rosie on the House. The number is 1-888-767-4348. Let's talk history with Audrey. Good morning, Audrey.
Good morning. There's something that's been bothering me for a long time.
Let's fix that.
It's the layout of the state of Arizona. It starts at the New Mexico border, goes straight west to Nogales, and then takes this northwest slice into San Luis. I'm wondering why the map planners didn't just go straight west and incorporate Rocky Point and then go up the Colorado River.
It makes sense, doesn't it?
It sure does, and that was originally what President Polk and his emissary, Mr. Slidell from South Carolina, wanted. However, after the war with Mexico and the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, which ended that on February 2nd, 1848, Santa Anna, who was, he may have been back in the saddle for the 11th time, back and forth, he gets overthrown, then he runs as a liberal, then he runs as a conservative, and then he gets thrown out again. And so issues in Mexico City took precedence, and it became politically impossible for...
They weren't going to give us that port.
They weren't going to give the port, and that's what happened. And now Santa Anna thought of it and needed the money, but ultimately the compromise was in 1853, 54, and that's what you see the final line of demarcation. And it's a very good question, Audrey, politics in Mexico City in many ways influenced the final configuration of what is now the state of Arizona, and we paid $15 million for a lot of good mineral land south of the Gila River, but it became politically impossible for us to have a port, and many of us lament that to this day.
Yeah, at $15 million, it was a pretty good buy. Yeah. That's the Gadsden purchase,
Gadsden purchase,
right?
Of 1853-54.
But that ruins my childhood beliefs. I mean, that's the real reason. The good reason is that the survey crew went to a taverna and got drunk and took a slight detour to the next tavern in Yuma. That's how I learned it. Isn't that true?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if I would have given that a correct answer if it was on a test.
That's another one of the great little history shows I like watching on the diminutive cable stations late at night, is how the states got their shape. Isn't that a great show? I love that show. Audrey, we appreciate the call. Is there anything else you'd like to ask Dr. Jack August?
It was very interesting, though. Happy birthday.
All right. Happy birthday, Arizona. Let's bring Pete into the conversation, who also has a question for our historian. Good morning, Pete. Thank you for calling Rosie on the House.
Morning. I heard there's a group trying to raise funds for the preservation of the cow barns at the State Fair that were built in the 1930s, the buildings along McDowell Road, and I heard that they were unable to meet their goal, and I wonder if the state of Arizona has made any decision about those buildings. I think the state fairgrounds are very important to the city. There's a chance the Coyotes hockey team might play there in October of 16 because their lease is going to expire in Glendale. But regardless of that, I wondered, what is the future going to be of those buildings? Has the state made a decision? Okay. This is the cow barn along McDowell.
Okay. All right. We've got a couple people here that might have some input on you. Don, that's your neighborhood, but let's start with Kim. Kim, what can you tell us? It has been in the news.
It has been in the news. And that's, unfortunately, that's not the Secretary of State's purview. That's the state exposition for the fair. So we don't know the answer to that question. Maybe Don has some more information on that. But it has been brought up, and I honestly don't know what the decision has been.
I can see saving the stadium. I can see saving the old madhouse on McDowell, but the horse and the pig and the chicken barns?
Well, I'll tell you.
I don't know, Doc. I like history, and I'm not even sure.
To be absolutely correct, it isn't really the livestock barns that are in jeopardy primarily right now. The debate is about the 1930s WPA office building, which fronts the McDowell Road, and that is a very important building to mark the development of Arizona during the 1930s, during the Depression and the recovery through the New Deal. And so it's a remarkable building in its modern style, mm-hmm. and it's a one-of-a-kind thing. It had great influence on FHA loans to homes and so forth. So there's a lot of important, significant events that happened there, as well as the architecture being important. Now, as far as the cow barns are concerned, you think that's, yeah, so what? But those big barrel vaulted roofs on them,
yeah,
are one of the last remaining examples of a construction type called lamella framing.
See, only Don Ryder.
That's cool. Welcome to
cool.
Obscurity reigns in my brains. So that's an important example of surviving construction methods of the time in the 30s and the 40s.
Dr. Jack, you know anything on those buildings?
No, Don knows. That's in his purview. I defer to him.
Okay. So we don't know. There is an attempt to raise some revenue to try and protect that particular building. Status unknown. Legislatively, financially, it's still up in the air.
And if people want to get in on that debate, I would recommend that they contact the Arizona Preservation Foundation.
Okay.
And that is the nonprofit group in Arizona that promotes the preservation of these buildings, and they're at the vanguard of saving that WPA building.
Let's get to one of the other key elements of Arizona becoming a state. And you can't address Arizona without addressing water. And Dr. August, I know water is like one of your primary topics.
Yes, it is.
I mean, it is the lifeblood of the 6 million people that currently live here. We landed here in 65. There was about a million people throughout the state. When we became a state, what was there? 180,000 in the state, something like that?
That's right.
So, and we're projected to possibly go to 15 to 18 million.
Yes, and it's one thing historically. I think Grady Gamage and other, from the legal perspective, I think we agree that Arizona does water well. And it starts from the very beginning, from Jack Swilling diverting that canal, kind of digging out an old Hohokam Canal in 1867.
Which at that time, that canal, which had been hand-dug 8 foot wide, 4.5 feet deep, hand-dug with no modern implements, how many years prior to Swilling stumbling on? A thousand years prior?
Yes, and that's
that's incredible.
It really was, and Phoenix found its reason to be, and by hook or crook, it first private sector tried to do it. It became so many settlers came in. There was flood and drought because of the salt. 1891 was a huge flood event. 1905, and because of the vicissitudes of flood and drought and the natural environment, what became the Salt River Project came into being, and with federal reclamation, the great President Theodore Roosevelt in 1902, the federal government stepped in. This was too big, and we have the big dam building era in American history, roughly. From the first reclamation project, Roosevelt Dam, and the Salt River Project up to about 1968 was probably the last of the big dam building era, the last big dam. But Arizona has benefited. We've had good, I think, progressive state policies for the most part. And it's one of the reasons Arizona does water better than, say, California. Just to pick one example.
We've had to treasure it from day one.
Yes. We've managed it well. We have some good futuristic, visionary state policies. Local governments have done well with it too. So I'm pretty optimistic and a cheerleader for Arizona and water conservation and water use.
I mean, Swilling, he starts the city of Phoenix by just bringing in a lawnmower and mowing the raw grass that's growing up all over the Verde Valley and feeding the armed forces, the cavalry horses.
Yeah, up at Fort McDowell. And then a guy named John Y.T. Smith, his name was John Smith, the 10th legislature, he went and got a bill passed to be yours truly, John, yours truly Smith, because there were so many John Smiths, no one knew who the John Smith was, and so that's why he's John Y.T. Smith. But he's one of those early pioneers that probably deserves a little more run, a little more study than he's gotten so
let's
far.
Let's come back and visit with him again after this short break. We'll talk more about him. We're here with Don Ryden and Dr. Jack August and Mrs. Kim Crawford from the Arizona Capitol Museum, broadcasting live from the Capitol Mall. It's Rosie on the House. We'll be right back.